Welcome to another episode in NACE International's COVID-19 podcast series. My name is Stephanie Chizik, and I'm editor-in-chief of Coatings Pro Magazine. Today we have with us Greg Martin, Vice President of Product Strategy and Development at MSA Safety. MSA Safety has been working to help healthcare professionals in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area by donating N95 protective masks and partnering with Allegheny Hospital Network to produce P100 and 200 LS respirator masks. Greg and I are recording this interview on Wednesday, May 6th, so please be sure to check back for updates and follow the guidance of health professionals such as the Centers for Disease Control. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you are located in the Pittsburgh area. What has life been like for you guys up there with regards to the COVID-19 outbreak and MSA safety?
Well, yeah, most of Pennsylvania has been, like many states, has been stay-at-home order except for essential businesses. MSA is as a safety equipment manufacturer is a essential business. Most of our workforce, though, if you're able to work from home, people are working from home, but our factories are still open, and we've just had to put in a lot of different safety practices for social distancing and such because of that.
Right. And I would assume it's kind of interesting because you do produce, you know, protective gear that you're really well versed with what needs to be done to keep your people safe to begin with. It's kind of a very meta sort of experience, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. Safety is really in MSA's culture. So, this was something that we take very, very seriously. And as soon as the CDC guidance started to come out, we were implementing changes and we're really staying on top of this from day one.
Yeah, that's great. So I mentioned in the intro that you guys have an organization, or I'm sorry, a collective sort of agreement with Allegheny Hospital Network. Can you sort of explain to us how that came about and what that entails?
Yeah, sure. At the very beginning, it was MSA does not manufacture N95 disposable respirators, but we do sell them. We source them from a third party, but they're not really part of our primary product offering. And anything that we did have in inventory, we donated to hospital networks around the world. What we did have in the Pittsburgh area, we donated to Allegheny Health Network, which were about 65,000 masks. We donated masks all throughout the world, I think totaling approximately 140,000. But beyond that, they were doing some work to look at their process for sterilization of the masks and asked if they could use some of our equipment. And then with that, MSA does manufacture elastomeric half mask, full mask respirators, primarily used for industrial applications. Okay. And so then we started working with them on that testing. And so they are using our Advantage 200 half mask respirator with the P100 filters now.
So I would imagine those are the types of masks that our contractors might be familiar with, or inspectors who are on the job site and there might be debris in the air from blasting or something like that. Are those the types of masks we're talking about?
Exactly, yes. So an N95, the N means that it is not suitable for particulates or aerosols with oil in the air.
Okay.
And then there is an R, which is oil resistant, and then there is a P, which is very oil resistant or close to oil proof. And then 95 is 95% efficient. There's a 97, and a 100 is 99.97% efficient against particulates. So these are a P100 is just a higher class over N95, so that's why those are being used. They aren't used for chemicals, which you may see certain chemical filters, which may be used by some of the contractors, but for particulates and aerosols, they are the exact same masks that are being used in industry.
And these are the kinds of masks too, not the N95s necessarily, but the other ones that they could potentially reuse and therefore might kind of help with the lack of PPE that's available out there for people?
Yeah, exactly correct. Just as a industrial company or application may clean and disinfect a mask after use, the hospitals are using a very similar process. And then with CDC guidance and the FDA has what's called an emergency use authorization, which allows these to be used in a healthcare setting.
Okay. I wonder too is, and you might not know the answer to this, but I wonder what the sort of learning curve is with these new masks, new to them masks, that is, with cleanliness and fit and all the other sort of items that come along. You can't just buy a mask and then go, I wouldn't think.
No, absolutely. And there was training that went along with this. They're fully aware and rolled out a fit testing program for using these. And hospitals actually have very advanced sterilization labs with a lot of different equipment. And they were in contact with us all along the way on different techniques and what you could use and what you couldn't use, and then they'd send them back to us to investigate. So they have their process down now, and it was all using their existing equipment, and then we just looked at it to make sure that it didn't affect the mask itself after multiple times through the process.
Okay, that makes sense. So it doesn't affect that the user is still getting the best protection that they did from day one, for example.
Exactly.
Gotcha. So what's, I mean, obviously you're, I would assume, having to ramp up production then to be able to supply now not only the healthcare industry, but additionally there are still people who are considered essential workers who traditionally have been buying the industrial masks. Is that the case? I mean, are you having to produce more to meet a bigger need now?
Absolutely. These masks that we're talking about here are made at a MSA subsidiary in North Carolina, and just looking at that site, immediately we went to three shifts, and then we're adding equipment and we're doing process optimization to just put out as many as we can. And what we are being very careful doing is we know that there's customers in industry that are still essential workers and still need protection who have been buying these for years. And so we're being very careful to make sure that we keep some of our inventory and are able to serve our long-term customers while also helping the frontline healthcare workers. And there's other industrial customers, just as an example, maybe a gas utility, that in the past they wouldn't need these to go into people's homes, but now they want them. And so even some of our customers who buy our other PPE, not necessarily respiratory, are now looking to add respiratory protection for their workers.
Yeah, I mean, just that makes sense. Just on, the personal side, we're all being asked to wear masks now, so it would make sense that if you are an essential employee, even if that wasn't a traditional piece of PPE that you wore, it certainly is considered now, I would think, just to be a protective measure. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and the other thing that we've started to see is lots of face shields. So we sell hard hats. The V Guard is the number one selling hard hat around the world. And before, you'd mostly wear a face shield for either chemical splash or for impact. And the face shields, what we're seeing now, are really more for to help with the social distancing and making sure that there's as little contact from worker to worker as possible, and we have seen a ramp up in that area as well.
I've seen a lot of like 3D printers, people who might have them for different industries or as a, I guess, on the personal side, starting to put together those types of face shields that you're talking about. Any thoughts on that? I'm just curious as, you guys are professionals at this, what it might be like for a someone kind of just putting it out on the side.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that the technology with 3D printing is really cutting edge. The problem with it today is the maximum volume you can get out of it. So even though you can make changes and you can make a change on the fly and then print the next one, so it gives you a lot of flexibility, your total output when you need to start producing 20,000, 200,000, 2 million of something, 3D printing just can't keep up versus like an injection mold machine. But to get it started, you can get started a lot quicker with 3D printing. So in an urgent time where you need to put something new out, it helps a lot. But longer term, when you're just pumping out product, it's really hard for that technology to keep up. At least that's my viewpoint on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's definitely helping to supplement maybe in the areas that need it. But like you're saying, you guys have the materials and the equipment probably to mass produce, which those pieces of equipment do not necessarily. So, yeah.
Exactly, yes.
What are you guys hearing from industry, your distributors or clients on the tail end, as far as how things are going, the impacts that maybe COVID-19 in general has had with them?
You know, I think like most people, what you hear more than anything is uncertainty. Mm. It's really difficult to predict when this is going to end, how long it's going to last. Is there going to be upticks again as some of the social distancing measures? What you do see is some industries have just had to completely shut down. Others were hopeful, like construction, in the summer months start to come back a little bit here. But it's cautious optimism that we're going to start seeing things come back, but it's also a reality that the economy really has been hit incredibly hard. The oil and gas industry has been hit really hard, and there's just a lot of people unemployed right now. So, you know, step one is getting people back to work and then getting things back to some semblance of normal.
Right. And I mean, you know, coming from the Pittsburgh area, you guys are a perfect example of an industry that can't really wait too long. You know, you've got so many bridges out there, and obviously corrosion is constantly a concern. So getting people maybe back onto those areas that really need the immediate work, and we don't necessarily have an infrastructure part of the bill coming out either. So
yeah, absolutely, and you're absolutely right. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and right now it doesn't look like there is an infrastructure part. I think step one, at least in Pennsylvania, there's a red, yellow, green system, and we're starting to see in some parts of the state certain construction projects being able to start back up. So hopefully things keep going well and these projects will be able to continue or at least restart.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys had the red, yellow, green. I mean, that's a good idea, at least to kind of identify the projects that need the most immediate work on them, I would think, since they all need them in some capacity.
Yeah, the red, yellow, green is really more about the counties and how the tracking of the coronavirus is going. Is it going up? Is it going down? And the ability for that county to deal with it. And so the governor, once they put you in the yellow, there are certain things they're allowed to restart that are more critical, but they weren't on the essential list. And so that really is the start. So right now, there's quite a few counties in northwest Pennsylvania that are yellow. We're here in Pittsburgh. We're hoping to get into the yellow soon.
Okay, gotcha. And you mentioned that some people obviously are not considered essential and, you know, might not be able to go to a job site right now or work outside of their home right now. Any sort of ideas that you've experienced or encountered that might be helpful as far as virtual opportunities go to help those people while they are stuck at home?
Well, you know, the one thing, and this is... it's not really a virtual opportunity, but it's something that we've seen a huge spike in, is we've switched a lot of our trainings that are normally in person to virtual training. So competent person training, confined space trainings. So while people are sitting at home, we even have new product webinars, things like that. So while people are stuck at home, being able to take some training classes and to get up to speed on some of the latest products and what's going on. We've seen a very large spike in that over the past month or so.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I've actually seen some on your LinkedIn. You guys have been putting a lot out there for people to access, which is, you know, perfect timing for something like that. There's definitely a need for it too. I mean, at least on the Coatings Pro side, I can't tell you the number of times we've seen pictures of people who are in what would be considered a confined space, but they're not wearing the proper gear for it. So obviously education is always needed in the industry.
Absolutely. We see that, like you mentioned, in a confined space. A big one that's been a huge push for us is compliance within fall protection. It's one of the top cited OSHA violations. It's also one of the top causes of injury, are fall from heights. And you see so many people, they're still not wearing their fall protection. They almost always have their hard hat, like it's part of their uniform, but fall protection's almost a secondary thing. So we've been really pushing a campaign to get awareness around fall protection and then launching these new products that are much more comfortable, really easy to use so that people want to wear them, and really hoping that that will help drive compliance in the industry and keep people safe.
That's a great idea. I think from what I've seen, a huge part of it, like you just said, is comfort. Same thing with eye protection. A lot of people, painters at least, seem to not want to wear them because they fog up or they're not comfortable or what have you. So,
Exactly, yes.
what else does MSA do? So obviously you just mentioned fall protection. We've been talking about respiratory protection and face shields. Do you guys have anything going on in 2020 that our subscribers should know about?
Yeah, well, some of the big ones are in fall protection. We launched a whole new line of harnesses, and the one word I would use to really describe them is mobility. We talk to a lot of customers, and they're like, you know what, I just want to go and do my job, and I don't want to think about I'm wearing this harness all the time. So changing the way that it's cut and fits on people, it makes it not only comfortable, you're not constantly rubbing and feeling it on your arm. So our new line of harnesses, and then we really spent a lot of time on some of the mechanicals, the retractable device that fits on the back of the harness. The fact that it's smaller, it's lighter, it's not cumbersome, it's clear, so you don't have to take it apart to inspect it. So we've been really spending a lot of time on fall protection. On head protection, what we've been seeing a lot of interest in is a climbing style helmet. So there's the traditional hard hat, which we're all aware of, with the brim on the front or the brim the whole way around. A climbing style helmet looks a little bit more like a hockey helmet, where there is no brim on the front. It's a little bit more of a modern look, has a chin strap on it, and it's really made to, when you're climbing, if you're looking up a lot, you don't have the back of the suspension hitting you in the back of the head. It pivots, and so it's just a more comfortable experience and an updated modern style if you're doing a lot of climbing or looking up or things like that.
That would be probably perfect for people in the business of having to go up turbines or any of those sort of like offshore infrastructure pieces, I would think.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's where we've seen a lot of interest. It's our H1 helmet, and that combined with the fall protection. If you take a full set of gear from 5, 6 years ago and compare it to the new stuff, you just feel a lot more free, and your equipment's there to protect you, but it's not hindering what you're doing. And that's really the goal of what we've been trying to accomplish over the past few years.
Well, sounds like a good goal to me. Any other what's going on in the future for you guys, or do you see any changes of how COVID-19 could do to the industry, to MSA, to all of us? I mean, obviously we don't, I keep saying this, we don't have like a crystal ball, but can you see any sort of trends that are already sort of showing?
Well, I mean, one thing I would definitely, so MSA makes half mask respirators, full mask respirators, powered air purifying respirators. And I know in the coatings industry, there is a lot of respiratory protection. As we spoke earlier, we're ramping up as fast as we can, but there is a lot of demand. And so lead times do start to get pushed out. So, one thing I certainly would say is if there's projects coming up or equipment that's going to be needed, plan early, order early, because in that area, I think from every manufacturer, it's going to be a bit more difficult to get the PPE over the next several months as everyone's ramping up and our sub-suppliers are ramping up. There's just a lot of demand.
It's a good point. And like you said, it's also there's a lot of it that is dependent on the weather, it's kind of seasonal. So I would imagine there's going to be a huge crunch coming soon for all of that equipment. So get your orders in now, I would think.
Exactly.
Great. Any sort of silver linings that you've noticed? I mean, I've definitely on my end kind of been experiencing an uptick in connecting with people who I maybe haven't connected with in years, and it's been an opportunity to reach out to them. Any other sort of positives you've been seeing within the industry that you'd want to share?
Yeah, well, I can certainly say whether it's some of our standard industrial customers or the healthcare workers that we've been connecting with, the amount of information sharing going on and everyone just wanting to find the best solution and keep people safe and do it the right way. And as soon as someone finds something out that can help others, they're sharing it. So, like you said, I feel like there is a lot of very good exchange of information going on across industries and across products. And we're trying to, as much as we can, if we're in the middle and we can help take something learned from one industry and help another industry, we're trying to do that as much as possible.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate all of your help and your information that you shared with us so far. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
So the best way is just on our website. If you want to reach MSA, it's www.msasafety.com, and you'll see all of the information. If you want to reach out to a specific, whether it's a distributor, there's a distributor locator. If it's customer service, there's emails, phone numbers on there. And you can find all the information right on our website.
Great. Thank you so much for all of your time and looking forward to talking to you again in the future.
All right. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks again to Greg Martin from MSA Safety for joining us today to chat about all things COVID-19 as well as what's going on in the future for the company. They've obviously been putting out a lot of great information online as well as supporting the industry during these troubling times. So if you can reach out to them and get more information, that would be great. Again, they are at www.msasafety.com. You can also find more information pertaining to COVID-19 as well as all things pertaining to corrosion and coatings at Materials Performance, which is materialsperformance.com, and Coatings Pro Magazine, which is coatingspromag.com. Again, I'm Stephanie Chizik from Coatings Pro Magazine. Appreciate you guys tuning in and looking forward to talking with you again sometime soon. Stay safe and happy coating. Thanks.